the shot. 3, 2, 1. We're talking with Hurricane High School head basketball coach Lane Christensen. Coach, the road travels are always tough.
Yes, they are. You know, you got the distance, the time on the bus, and gathering yourself when you get here to play. But, hey, you know, when they come down to play us, they've got to get the same type of situation. We may make a few more trips where they just have to make one. We have to make seven of them. But, you know, it's something that kids are going to have to live with. We just have to get off the bus, get ready to play ball.
Now, your ball club last year spent most of his time playing 1A schools, qualifying for the 2A tournament this year. You spent a lot of time playing 3A schools.
Yeah, it's just kind of the way the schedule fell. Early in the year, with the tournament up to the Cedar and scheduling Dixie home and home, it just happened that our 3A schools were played first. I'm sure this is going to help us because our record right now doesn't look like we're a good ball team, but we're a good ball team. And I think when we get playing these 2A schools and competing against them, we're gonna up our record, and we're going to be playing the same type of kids that we are. And it's got to be a plus for us.
That experience against the 3A schools, the tougher ball clubs, you mentioned it's got to be a plus for you. Can it work negatively for the kids also?
Well, I think it can. You know, you kind of get down on yourself. You lose a few ball games. You start second guessing yourselves, and we've lost some that we should have had from 3A schools. But yet, we know potentially that we're a good ball team, and we just got to hang in there and group and just gel together. And I think it's going to come. I think the problem last year was going against these 1A schools that we never did really get tested. And I think we're being tested right now, and we're not living up to our potential going against some of these 3A schools. But I think the kids realize that now. They know what they have to do to win ball games. And, hey, I think we're going to get it done.
The schedule from here on out will be mostly against the schools your own size. How does the league look this year for you?
Well, I think it's a fairly balanced league. Every ball game, with the exception of one, is a 2A school that we have from here on in. And right now, our league, there's Manti's leading it with 3-0, and there's about four teams tied at 2-1, which we're one of. And it's a very balanced team, a league. I think, any three teams could probably end up winning that thing, placing second and third. And so it's going to be a real dogfight. I feel that if we can win at home and maybe lose two on the road of our five road trips, I think we can end up playing in first or second position. And this is what we've talked to the kids, that we've got to get some ball games on the road. We can't lose them on the road. And then we've got to come back home when we get in our gym there and win at home. So that's what we're trying to do.
Your ball club has a little better size than it's had over the past few years.
Yeah, this is probably the biggest ball team I've coached for a long time. And they're fairly quick, too, and experienced. Talent-wise, we're a good ball team. I think the kids realize that. Sometimes a little bit of maturity. You know, we're still playing a lot of juniors. They're not really sure, and sometimes they second-guess themselves. But I think, as the season progresses and we start to play a little bit more, they realize that what they have to do, and we're just going to have to get it done.
Balance on your team. How do you evaluate it?
Very good. I've got 10 kids on the varsity, and I've started 8 different kids in different ball games, and so I feel it's got to be a plus when we can play 10 kids in a basketball game. You've got to feel like that. Someone gets in foul trouble, you can go to the bench and you're not being hurt at all. And I think this is going to help us down the stretch.
Some individuals now, Gary Blackham, his development so far.
Hey, he's coming on real good. The problem that Gary had, and we've talked to him about it, and he's really working on, was his mental toughness, staying in the ball game, not getting down on himself and worrying about a call and kind of crybabying about it. Right now, he hasn't fouled out of a ball game for us this year. That's something that he just didn't get done last year. He was fouling out of them regularly. And, hey, he's leading us in scoring. He's leading in rebounds right now. But potentially, we can still get a little bit more out of him. And he realizes this. And I think as each game goes on, he's going to come on for us and get a little bit stronger. He's going to be a fine ball player before this is over this year.
Let's take a look at the forwards. Begin with Steve Shamel.
Steve is maturing. Steve is probably as fine a shooter, potential shooters that I've coached there at Hurricane. and he's just got to believe in himself just a little bit more. He takes that ball up in the early ball game and scores it. And I think as the game goes on, he starts maybe second-guessing himself on his shooting and position, when to shoot, when not to. And I think that's starting to hurt his shooting a little bit. But shooting very good. Defensively, he's playing fine. Very tough. In fact, in the last few ball games, I put him on some of the better scorers on the other teams, and he's held them right down. And so Steve's potential is there, and I think he's reaching out and he's getting it. He's playing very well for us this year.
The rest of the forward line now.
John Beatty playing at another forward position, a junior. Started some ball games for us. He hasn't started a few. Hey, potentially John is again as fine a shooter, you know, that's on a ball team. His overall quickness is not real quick, but he really anticipates. He gets rebounds and gets balls that other people don't because he anticipates and moves to the spots and gets them. Mark Tishner, a senior, his playing time hasn't been a lot, but he's really maturing. His attitude is real good. He started a couple ball games for us, and possibly tonight he'll probably be a starter. His difference has been his attitude. When he gets down and tells himself, hey, this is what I have to do to play ball, he does a good job. Sometimes he gets down on himself a little bit and feels sorry, and he just doesn't get the job done. But, hey, he knows what he has to do, and he's come in and talked to us, and I think he's ready to do it.
Dan Humphreys at the guard line.
Danny's been very consistent for us all year. I think Danny's averaging about 10 points a ball game. He's maturing greatly. I just couldn't be any more pleased with the way he's playing. We've got to get him to handle the ball just a little bit better. He's getting a few too many turnovers. But defensively, I put him on some of the tougher ball players, and he's just done a great job. A week ago, we put him on the Sorensen kid from Tooele that scored 22 the night before. He holds the kid to 6 points and fouls him out of the ball game. And so Danny is a real plus for us, just doing us a great job.
The other guard, Reed Sly.
The other guard right now is kind of kind of a real problem. We've talked to the kids about it. I've started three different kids there. I've started Reed Slack there, and I'm sure that the knee is still bothering Reed a little bit. Mentally, he's maybe not quite ready to give me 100% there, and I'm sure physically he's not giving 100% because of that knee. But, hey, when he gets solid, Reed is a fine ball player. He's just got to get mentally ready, and then when the physical part of it comes around, he's going to be able to help us. Terrell Wilson started for us in the place of Reed when his knee was banged up pretty good. And Terrell is a good, very fine shooter. He just mentally sometimes gets down on himself. He makes a mistake and he worries about it too much, where he's just got to shake it and come right back and get it done. He worries about it to the point that he makes two or three more mistakes because of him making the first mistake. And Terrell knows that. When he shakes that, he's going to be a plus for us at that spot.
Against Miller tonight, your ball club has to do what to win?
Well, I think we've got to control the boards. We're bigger than them. They might be slightly quicker, but we have got to control the boards. We've got to get the shots inside. We've got to move it around till we get it into Blackham and Shamo. And if they suck back in and play the zone, which, you know, that I'm kind of maybe expecting, we got to be patient, step in, maybe shoot that 13-foot jump shot that Danny and Terrell Wilson can both hit. We've just got to be patient, get the shot in our area balanced up. And, hey, I think that's, you know, that's the key to the ball game, taking the percentage shot and controlling the ball, you know, inside on missed shots and getting some second shots inside.
Coach Lane Christensen, thank you for being with us, and good luck tonight.
Appreciate it, Larry. Thank you.
Become attached to him.
Coach Ray Odette, thank you for being with us, and good luck tonight.
Okay, thanks, Larry.
Three, two, one. We're talking with Dixie College head football coach Lee Bennell. Coach, beautiful day for a football game in many ways.
Yes, it is. It's our homecoming, Larry, and it's kind of an exciting day. The parade starts everything off, and you have a fine assembly, and ball game starts at 2 o'clock, and it just looks like it's going to be an ideal day.
Looks like you're going to have a good crowd, too.
Certainly hope so, and I know that helps.
This Ricks College ball team, one of the best teams you face this year.
Yes, they definitely are. They've were a powerhouse up there. Of course, we made a lot of mistakes and made it easy for them, but they are a real fine ball team.
The difference as far as just being defeated in a close-scoring game and that 44-7 route was four fumbles inside from the 15-yard line in.
That's what it was, Larry, and, of course, you being there saw it and just what happened when you give it to them that way. And we haven't had that problem since that time, and we're hoping that maybe that long trip will affect them the same way it did us.
Last two ball games, much different on offense for Dixie.
Yes, it's starting to come along a little bit, and we feel like that we are able to do a few more things on offense, and we plan to put a few new wrinkles in today. We've been practicing for 2 weeks.
Notice your quarterback is moving up in the league standings in passing yards.
Yes, he had a good game against Snow, and the fact that he's steady there and people are counting on him really helps.
Has that been a pleasant surprise now with Jeff?
Well, it was kind of an unexpected thing. I, at the beginning of the season, thought that wouldn't turn out that way. You never can tell for sure, but he looks like he's solid in that position at this time, but Dave Beckstead is pushing him hard, and I wouldn't be surprised if Dave didn't do some playing today.
Both of these young men are freshmen. You've got to be looking forward to building a team next year around these two kids.
Well, we've been building all this year, Larry, as you know, and hoping to groom some of these young kids so that they can produce. But, you know, we still have four games left, counting this one, this season, and we're doing everything we can to win those games this year. And in doing so, why, that in itself will help rebuild the next year.
Ricks College, up there, they had a devastating offense, especially from the 15-yard line in again. But the quarterback started right off passing, Dave Hanson, but he isn't with them now.
No, he isn't. Steve Lindsley will be the quarterback starting, and he's of the same mold. He likes to throw, and that's their philosophy. And I would suspect that that's what they'll try to do, is to throw the ball right away. I do think that we've made some adjustments in our secondary that design-wise will help. One thing that will hurt us today, Sam Gray won't be in the lineup in that secondary, and so we'll have to count on his backup doing a good job.
A lot of people may wonder, what was Sam Gray? Why not?
Well, we had a problem with him getting back from the deer hunt vacation. He was a day late, and so he will be on the sideline, but he won't play.
What about any other injury possibilities with Dixie? Anything that's going to hurt you severely?
Well, Glenn Harlocker was injured in our last game and had to have his knee operated on, and he was outside linebacker for us, so he's done for the season. Other than that, and Sam Gray being disciplined, we're healthy.
Changes in the lineup today for Dixie?
No, there's not many changes to be made at this point. We'll be going with basically the same people that we have done up to this point, and with Sam Gray out of there, we've moved Rick Hawkins to free safety, and also Randy Fry, and we'll be looking at both of those people in there and encouraging them to do the job. It's kind of a new position for them, and so things are a little bit different. But if they can just keep one thing in mind, and that's to stay back and stop the touchdown pass, that's the main job they have to do.
Randy Fry's had some outstanding moments for Dixie already this year.
Yes, he's got a big heart, and he plays really hard, and he wants to achieve very badly, and we're thrilled with the way he's come along.
You had a week off last week. Coming off a disappointing loss against Snow, what do you do with the team after that, looking forward to Rick's? You have 2 weeks to prepare.
Well, we put in a few new things we want to do for Rick's, and then we, since you have that bye, it gives you a chance now to go back to some of the basics and work on some of the basic things that techniques that players need to know. And we also had a scrimmage with SUSC's JVs on our field as a practice, and that brings along a lot of experience. We, in that scrimmage, we use the people that are not playing in games, and this is the second time we've scrimmaged them. We went up to their place early in the year and had a scrimmage, and so our backup people that aren't being seen in the game sometimes are still getting a lot of experience because we try to bring them along this other way, and we did that, and then we gave them Friday off. School was closed, and then we came back Monday and practiced, so it did give us a chance to adapt a few new things to our offense to take a lot of timing to prepare, and we will demonstrate those today. Hopefully we don't have any problems with the timing.
Preparing, I know from the last time you faced Ricks, you always prepare for the next time you're going to face the team. And yet now there are five key ball players missing from Ricks College. What does that do to your plans?
Well, it doesn't alter our plans at all, in except that we know that we may have a better chance to get a hold of the quarterback. Dave Hansen was very slippery back there, and we put a rush on him, and he'd squirm out of it and complete the pass. And it puts a lot of pressure on your defensive backs when they have to cover a receiver that long. We do feel like we'd be able to put a little bit more pressure on Leslie than we were Dave Hansen. The other people that they lost, we don't think that it'll be make that much difference with their team. They do have good depth. The tailback did make some long runs up there against us on some reverses and fake reverses. But that was more by design than individual talent. And, of course, we've been practicing against that fake reverse. That was devastating to us up there to see the reverse coming, call a reverse, and think he got it stopped, and it was a fake reverse, and he just goes right around and for a big gainer. But we have been working on that, and we know they're going to throw the ball a lot. And their guard that was dismissed from the team didn't play the majority of the time against us up there anyway, starting because he was having trouble handling our people, and they brought in the substitute. So it will make a difference in the fact that their team now knows they don't have him, and it may benefit them. On the other hand, we think that the fact that they lost those key players, it's our home game, they traveled, it's our homecoming, it's in the Sun Bowl, which we're used to and they're not, and our team has been improving a great deal, and the fact that Ricks knows they beat us 44-7 up there, no matter what that coach tells them, those kids aren't going to believe that we're going to be any tougher than that down here. But we know we are, and that may work to our advantage.
Without those fumbles, it's a 17-7 game.
That's true, and except maybe some of those fumbles would have generated some motivation, and we'd have scored more too. So there's just no way to equate for sure how it would turn out without them. And we don't anticipate being able to play flawless ball, and you tell your players now if we make a mistake, we fumble a ball, we're going to compensate in other ways. But we've worked very hard on hanging on to the ball, and sometimes that fumble does occur because of a great defense. You know, a running back drops a ball. It could come from a great hit, somebody stealing that ball from them, and some credit has to be given to the team that causes a fumble, too. So we've been working on that so that not only are we prepared to stop the caused fumble, but to hang on to the misfortunate one just to drop.
Ken Schmidt brought some wide-open football into the league. Rookie coach, though, from a coach's opinion, has he adjusted?
Well, I don't know how he has adjusted yet because he hasn't lost a game. Ken Schmidt is a fine coach, and I know it's an adjustment. He has an assistant, Ron Hahn, that was there the year before and has helped a great deal with that adjustment in the maturity of their ball club. But it doesn't matter a great deal in that respect if you have the great players. We always talk among coaches, it's when you work the hardest as a coach and when it becomes the most difficult is when you don't have the great players. If you have the great players, you don't have to do a lot of coaching. And
3, 2, 1. We're talking with Dixie High School head basketball coach Mark Poth. Coach, you ran into a buzzsaw last night against Tempe.
Well, Tempe is, they have a good team. They had a good big man that did it, shut Robbie out completely the whole game. They had four, you know, quick players to go with them, a lot like the Provo team. And they pressured us heavily, played good aggressive defense, and that's something we really didn't experience as of yet, was the tough pressure defense, and something that we have to work on and do a better job if we expect to reach the goals that we've set.
That little Chris Young came off the bench and was the key for Tempe. He turned things around.
He really was. He played good defense. He came up with a couple of steals, came down, led the fast break well, and made a couple good shots and really got him going.
You mentioned Gentry. He shut out in the first half and his lowest point total of the year. They collapsed on him, didn't give him any room.
Well, they sure do. They play really good defense. Everyone jumps to the ball. They get good weak side help, and It was one of the better defensive teams we faced this year, and that told the difference.
Impression of Sagers this offseason?
Oh, he's a fine young ball player. He's 6'1", good shooter, good quickness, and only a sophomore. He played last year as a freshman. He got some varsity experience, and they say he's the best sophomore in the state. Fine player.
Nord kid, red hot against you.
Well, he was. We put Webster on him, and he got 25 points in the first half, and we kind of kid about it a little bit. But, hey, he's an exceptional player. He's only a junior, shoots extremely well, good quickness, and we just didn't do the job on him.
Kelly Graves did a good job in the second half on North.
Yes, he did. We thought we'd make a defensive change. We went with Hutch and Snow most of the time on the guard line. We put Kelly down on the forward, and Kelly is a fairly good defensive player. We put him on Nord, and I think held him to about 5 points that second half.
Now, Kelly seems to be doing the job both ends of the floor and everything in between.
Well, that's what he has to do.
Good shooting night for Kelly.
Yeah, it was. He's a fine shooter. He's shooting, in the 60% for the season from the field, and that's taking most of the time 15-20 footers, so I think he's one of the finest shooters in the state.
A lot of people were probably wondering what your thoughts were when you jumped out 12-0 on them.
Well, we did. We jumped out 12-0. The kids looked good, and right then I was thinking, well, the travel didn't affect us at all. But they came back, and I thought they would. The secret is when they don't score, they can't set up that full-court press on us. But when they do score, they get in that tough man-to-man full-court press. They run jump, blitz switch, and do a lot of things out of it, and the kids didn't handle it as well as we did in practice.
The kids are probably aware that American Fork will most likely throw a press again.
Well, it will. I'm kind of glad we're playing American Fork tonight, because I think we ironed a few things out against Tempe that second half, and I hope we can carry it over to this game. But they'll play a lot like Tempe. They'll pick you up full court man-to-man, and they'll jump trap you and bring up weak side help. So I look to have another game like Tempe tonight.
Both teams last night, Tempe and Dixie, showed that they were not about to give up. You guys came back, brought it back within six a number of times.
Yeah, we did. We had it down to six and actually missed two layups down the floor. We could have brought it down to four. We missed a few layups there, but, they missed some, too. It goes both ways. But I don't worry about the kids. I know we got the capability to come back on anybody, and I think we proved it again last night, but we just made too many mistakes. You turn over the ball 17 times in the first half, and it's tough to win ball games.
Do you get nervous coming into American Fork, knowing the tradition and knowing that they are without a win yet?
Well, I am, because I know they have a fine player. Their big man hasn't played for the last four games. He's had the hurt ankle, and he's 6'7". But, knowing our luck, he'll be ready tonight. And, they got tradition here. They got pride. And I know it's only a matter of time till they, take off and get things going again. They have a program here, and I look for a tough game tonight.
They like the running game.
Yeah, they like to run. They get it out, and they usually have five good ball handlers on the team. So that puts added pressure on us. We have to get back on defense.
Dixie likes to run also. Do you prefer playing a running team like this?
Well, sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. We can run. We get out and run. But overall, I don't think we have the quickness of a Temp View and American Fork. I think if we get out and run too much with them, it could hurt us.
Some good signs last night. Randy Wyatt, best outing probably since Hurricane.
Well, Randy is. He's a junior. He's, one of the better kids in our program. And we really feel that Randy is probably one of the key players for us to reach our goals, he's the kid who has to come along. So we're almost in a situation where we're going to live or die with the kid.
Turnovers a problem last night.
Yeah, once again, they were. From the first game, we had 33, and we brought it all the way down gradually, and then we hit Tempview, hit the pressure, went back up. That tells a difference. When we turn the ball over, that's when we run into trouble.
For people who may be wondering, what's the secret against the pressure? What sort of moves do the kids need to make tonight like you'd made in the second half?
Well, what we did wrong against Tempview is we got the ball in bounds and we were in a hurry to bring it down the floors, which, they want us to do that. They want us to get the ball and put it down on the floor and pick it up and try to find someone to pass it to. We have to be patient. We got to get the ball in bounds to the people we want to bring it up the floor. We got to clear everyone out and be patient.
Rob Gentry, have you had a chance to talk to him very much?
Yeah, I've talked to Robbie a little bit. I think you're going to see a new Robbie tomorrow. We kind of kid about it. We're talking to the kids, and I says, well, I think if we would have had Gentry last night, we would have won. But I think Rob's going to be ready to play tonight.
For your coaching experience so far, the road is tough, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I don't use it as an excuse. We came out on Tempe. We were ready to play. We played fairly well overall except for, some parts of our game, but I don't use it as an excuse. We got beat.
Coach Mark Poe, thank you for being with us, and good luck tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Three, two, one.
Is some candy over there yet?
We might as well get going on this. Three, two, one. We're talking with Dixie High head basketball coach Mark Poe. Coach, first time you've had a chance to face Orem this year.
Yes, it is. It's our first meeting with Orem. We expect a good game. It's our last practice game of the season, so we plan on trying a few things new and introducing some more of the defense to the kids. And I look to have a good learning experience and a good, tough game.
This Orem team is stepping down from 4A in Division of Mountain View off of Orem. Most of these kids are used to the big school competition.
Well, they sure are, but when you split a school, that means half of the starters are going somewhere. So they're kind of caught in that situation where they have to play, a lot of JV kids. Basically, when they split the school, Mountain View got most of the better seniors and Orem got most of the better juniors. So I think they'll have a young team out tonight, and I think they'll be aggressive and a good hustling group.
With your experience last year at Provo High as an assistant, you were involved in half of one of the strongest rivalries in the state. Provo and Orem is one of the best.
Oh, it is. It's definitely. It's a great rivalry, and Orem's always been at the 4A the last few years, and Provo's been 3A, and these last year and the years before, Provo's been, fairly successful against Orem. So I think that kind of shows the 3A teams can definitely play with the 4A teams in the state.
This Orem team has a strong potential to develop a lot of rivalries in Region 6.
Well, they sure do. They're right in the center here. When you get about four high schools all in about 10 minutes drive of each other, you really can develop some good inner-city rivalries.
Orem traditionally has been a hustling ball club, a very powerful ball club, a team that likes to run.
Yeah, they have. They've had the, Chessmans come out of here, and they've had some good ball players come out of Orem. They got some good kids, and, it's in the city where they're always going to have good athletes.
Dixie, going against Orem, your ball club likes to run it too.
Well, we do. We're fairly big, but on the other hand, we do like to get the ball out and run when we can. We've been playing a little zone, a little man-to-man, and lately we haven't ran the break as well as I think we're capable of, but I think we're going to try to get it out and run a little bit more tonight with it.
This is the first time in three games that you faced a 3A opponent. The assessment of the development of the team against Escalante and against Hurricane.
Well, I think the kids kind of play to the competition. When we play the littler schools, I think we don't play as well. We play the bigger schools, and I think we play a lot better.
This Orem team tonight will provide some challenges. We've mentioned that. Let's talk about your team, starting lineup.
Okay, we'll start the same way we've had the last, eight games. We'll go with Wyatt at one forward spot along with Paul Webster. We'll start Robbie at the center slot. We'll have on the guard line Gentry and Snow. Now, we've been experimenting around. We've been playing Gentry a little bit more outside and moving Randy into the post. With our offense, it interchanges a lot, so it really doesn't matter. But I think the kids are ready. They're ready for another game.
Some individual development this year. Let's talk about some individuals on that starting lineup. Kelly Graves.
Well, Kelly's a fine kid. He's worked hard this summer. Not only has he grown in ability over the year, but I think he's also grown in confidence, and that's really making a difference. I always say we do have Kelly and Robbie are our main two kids, and that's, you know, simple. If you come out and watch his play, you can see most of the offense is centered around them, and they're great defensive players on the other hand. But development-wise, Kelly Graves has come a long ways, I feel, since I saw him last year.
Rob Gentry.
Well, Rob's super. We got him listed 6'3 in the program, but that's with his tennis shoes on and up a little bit, I think. But Rob's a super kid at 6'2. I'll put him against any 6'2 kid in the state. You know, night after night, he's got to go against the big post man. But with his, you know, superior jumping ability, he's able to play that post position. With his quickness, he's able to take the ball to the hoop. And he's been scoring well. He's our leading scorer so far for the year.
Last time you were in Utah County, he had the best night of a Dixie ball player in a good long time.
Yeah, he had 31 points against American Fork. He played strong. He took the ball well to the bucket. And I hope we see more of that tonight.
Mason Snow, the little guard.
Well, Mason's a steady kid. You know, he goes out there and he does the job. He shoots when he's open and usually hits. He's a good shooter. You know, he's playing with some kids that are also good shooters. But Mason, he's a great shooter. And he shoots when he's open. He's an appropriate player. And I think he does what he has to do to make our team win. He comes down. He brings the ball down the floor. He's leading the team in assists. And that's what we need Mason to do.
Kelly Graves lookalike, Paul Webster.
Well, Paul's a good kid. He really hasn't played that much basketball except for the last few years. But I think every game he's getting a little better. And as far as confidence goes, I think he's getting more confident. And he's starting to take the ball a little bit stronger to the bucket. He's shooting less fadeaways and less off-balance shots. And I think as the season winds down, I think Paul really has the potential to be one of the better forwards in the region.
Dave McClaws.
Well, McClaws he's a tough kid. I hate, when we play with the kids, I hate to be on him because I know he's always a kid who's going to box you out on a rebound. He loves to play defense, and that's what makes him a valuable part of our team. He goes in there, for an example, against Pleasant Grove. Robbie was in foul trouble. I had to put him against Bone at about 6'5", strong kid. Hey, and he shut him off, and that was the difference of us winning the game. He's a super defensive player. And a good team man.
He doesn't pack that much weight for being so physical.
No, he doesn't. He's just mentally and physically tough, and that's what makes him a good player.
Randy Wyatt.
Randy's the only junior we start, and I really feel Randy has the potential to be one of the better players come out of Dixie. Starting as a junior, he's getting a lot of experience this year. As far as offense goes, we really don't need the offensive punch out of him with Kelly and Robbie in there. But he's good on rebounding. I think what Randy needs to work on is he needs to get physically stronger. And as he gets physically stronger, that's going to increase his speed. And then I think he'll kind of reach the potential I think he's capable of becoming.
Mike Hutchings has seen a lot of action this year. Mike's development.
Yeah, we call Mike our sixth man. When you look for a sixth man, you look for a kid who can go in there, hustle, make some things happen, play tough, aggressive defense. And that's kind of the reason why we decided to go with Mason as a starter over Mike, because we felt Mike could come in and give our team more of a lift with his hustle and team play. He's a good passer. He likes to penetrate. And he makes things happen on defense. And that's why Mike's a valuable part of the team.
Now you have the rest of your bench, mostly juniors, two sophomores, Dave Esplin, Cole Lay.
Right. Dave gets in every once in a while, and Cole Lay has gotten in a few games here and there, and we feel we got some good young kids coming up. And you know, next year we look forward to, you know, some potential there, but we got a lot of work to go with those young kids.
Coach, you've had almost a half season now of coaching at AAA level, a 3A level, head coach at Dixie High. Your impression of being head coach as opposed to one of the assistants, any more ulcers?
You bet. There is quite a deal. That's one of the things I said. I said there's really a big change from being an assistant coach to a head coach. You know, when you're assistant for Jim Spencer at Provo High, and
You know, he's making all the major decisions and all the moves, and you got the super kids, you know, talent-wise. You can compare to anyone in the state. Hey, you can kind of sit on that bench and feel good. When people get upset, they don't call you, they call Jim. But on the other hand, when you're the head coach, it definitely is a lot more pressure. But, you know, I don't mind a little pressure.
It must be a blessing in one sense to come down to Dixie and have pretty good talent to come into a head coaching position.
Well, that's true. We got two kids that I think are, you know, can play college ball next year. It was fortunate to come down. I had two good kids to work with, and they were willing to work hard this summer to improve their skills and, you know, kind of introduce them to some of the offense and that during the BCI, and that really helped out. So, actually, we came in this fall a new coach, a new system, but we actually were working, you know, in June and July at the BCI, so that helped. We got, I'd say, half a season worth of play. Not quite that much, but we did get some experience early, which helped carry us over to, I think, give us a pretty good start this year.
Winning record, in fact, a heavily winning record, going against Orem tonight in Orem's gym. This is one of the older gyms. It's got to be a challenge.
I like it. It's got a lot of tradition in this gym, and it feels good just sitting here.
What are you going to have to do tonight to beat Orem?
I think we're going to have to play quick. We got to be out there moving. We got to have intensity. We got to be able to adjust whatever they throw at us. If they go with their half-court trap, which they've used in the past, we're going to have to show the patience and break that. But I feel if we play our game, we should win.
Coach Mark Poe, thank you for being with us, and good luck tonight.
Okay, thank you.
It's just all but a toss-up between those two. And I started Dave last week, and we won, and so I'm going to start him this week.
Jeff started off shakily in the second half last week and then suddenly got things together.
Yes, he did, and that's a mark of someone that provides leadership. You know, he didn't come off and hang his head. He was when he was out of there, he was talking to players and patting them on the back and saying, come on, we can do it. We don't need to make these mistakes. Let's go out there and do it. And I could have very easily said, he's not going to do it, and gone back with Dave Beckstead. But you can destroy a kid for anything in the future, sometimes if you abandon him when things are going a little bit tough. And I felt like I could, I was going to give him a good, honest try to go and to prove that he could do it, and he did that, and I was tickled that he did.
At this point in the season, it really is preparation for next year as much as trying to win this game, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is preparation, and yet we've got some sophomores that are playing their last game, and that's a big thing for them. They want to do well, and they want to play. And you got freshmen that you want to build and try to prepare for next year. But underlying all other things, we want to win this game, Larry. And we're going to play those people at those times to do the best we can to win the game. And that's what our primary goal is.
You have a shot at it.
Yes, we feel we do. Looking at the last game in St. George, two kickoff returns was the difference. And if we stop that and we can contain Speller somewhat, we're going to go. Now, it's going to be interesting to see if they can stop our trap plays, because that was big for us last week. I know that they've been practicing all week to stop our trap plays. Now, to do that, they've got to slow down the rush. If they slow down the rush, that should give us more time to throw, and we feel like we can throw if we have the time. So as this game proceeds, you're going to see an awful lot of things going on there to find out if they can stop or trap, if we can throw because we have more time, and if we can stop their kicking game. And these things are going to be going back and forth, so it should be fun.
This is just with helmets and shoulder pads, isn't it?
Yes, and the human factor.
Coach Lee Bunnell, thank you for being with us. Good luck today.
Thanks, Larry.
Three, two, one. We're talking with Kurt Brinkman, a marathonist with the wheelchair division. Kurt, you've become somewhat of a celebrity over the years. How has that affected your life?
Well, I can't really say that I'm a celebrity, but I've done a few things maybe that some other people haven't had the opportunity to do. And it those things have made an impact on my life, and my life has been affected because of those. I have less time at home and more time, you know, doing speaking engagements and different things. But I enjoy that.
Are you still going to school at BYU?
No, I graduated a couple of years ago in psychology, and I'm presently working for, well, in fact, I work for Deseret Industries, manage a store in American Fork that we just opened up about 2 months ago.
Do you still find time to participate in marathons extensively?
You know, I really don't have the time to participate in marathons, especially because of the work schedule, but I'm getting to the point where I don't have a lot of time to even train anymore with other things that I'm doing, but I still try to get my training in. I feel when I get out during the day and do, at least 6 miles, and I usually try to do between 10 and 12, I just feel a whole lot better the rest of the day. I'm able to do my work a lot with a lot more enthusiasm, and I just feel that I'm able to accomplish a lot more because of that.
Now you're down to St. George in connection with LDS Social Services, talking specifically about the Deseret Industries program. Is that it?
Well, it's the welfare services from Utah County down, and that includes Deseret Industries, Social Services, Employment Services. And it's more or less a management leadership seminar, and giving me some things to use back in the store in American Fork.
I almost hate to say that you're physically handicapped with the fact that you've been able to participate in so many athletic events. Was that a spur to become athletically active, or were you athletically active before the injury?
Well, let me say first that I don't look at myself as really being handicapped either. So, and when I race, I feel like I'm racing against the other runners. Of course, we are in a different division, and I'm, in a sense, really not competing against them, yet I am, in you know, myself. I want to beat them, and oftentimes I'm able to, and that's a thrill for me, and it's not like I gloat in it or anything, but it's a good feeling, you know, to know that I'm able to compete like that. I played some basketball. I went through everything, basketball, football, and track, you know, before I had my accident. I had hopes in basketball, the greater hopes in basketball than anything else, but my accident was when I was 16, and so I really didn't get to have the opportunity that I could have. It was about 4 or 5 years after that. In fact, it was my wife who really got me involved in wheeling or running or whatever you want to say, and in an indirect and a direct way, you know. We went on a walkathon, the very first thing that I ever did in wheeling. It was a 21-mile walkathon, and she was the one that encouraged me to do that. And it took us 7.5 hours. I mean, to do 21 miles, now I do it an hour and a half, you know, if I'm really competing hard. But to do that 21 miles, but that's where it started. And then the next day I woke up, I couldn't move. I was so sore. But I enjoy the competitive spirit, and I'm glad that I'm still able to do that.
Obviously, with the exercise in your arms and shoulders, this must help you just like it does a regular runner as far as your heart and lung development, doesn't it?
It's not as strenuous on the heart or on the lungs. You don't have as much action with the blood. You don't have the big leg muscles. You just have the small arm muscles. You do get some of that, but not as much. You have to go a lot farther to get the same effect as a runner doing even a mile or something. But it does help. contrary to what many people believe, it doesn't build bulk, okay, on the arms. In fact, I've lost 15 pounds since before the Boston Marathon, just before. In fact, I lost my hour and 55 minutes in the Boston Marathon, I lost 7 pounds body weight, tissue, and I haven't yet gained that back. And then I lost an additional 8 pounds since that time from wheeling, you know, from the constant physical exercise.
A lot of runners have that same sort of experience of not being able to maintain weight. That surprised me about wheelchair competitors.
Yeah, and I eat like a horse. Yeah, you know, 4 and 5 meals a day, and I still can't. You know, I still can't keep the weight on. I've been trying to gain that weight back, and I haven't been able to. I just keep burning it off. But that's good. It's keeping me slim.
Do you try to get into weightlifting programs or anything to help build up the shoulders?
I used to work on the weights. Used to do a lot of weight training, probably about 4 days a week, spending 2 hours a day. And it was good. It was building some bulk, and I was putting on some weight. But the exercises I was doing was not helping my distance for training in my wheelchair. And so I stopped doing that. In fact, it's been 2 years since I've worked on weights now. And you can tell by looking at my chest, I don't have the size that I used to have. Of course, it hasn't decreased that much. I was always small as far as having any bulk on my chest or arms. But you can notice the difference. But yet I'm still able to go out there and do the 26 miles. So that's, you know, and I think I'm able to do it better. I do some swimming. Swimming helps me, I think. You know, that gives a little extra cardiovascular endurance, a little more muscle tone, all-around muscle tone.
Now, in competing in the wheelchair division, it seems like only recent years that it's come to the forefront. Has it been going on for quite a while in marathons?
Not in marathons. Wheelchairs haven't participated in marathons. Well, 75 was the first year that anyone ran a marathon in a wheelchair. And then no one did it in 76, and then 77 there were, I think, seven of us who ran in the Boston Marathon in wheelchairs. And so really, I guess, in a sense, you can say it was 77 that it started. And just recently, just this last year or two, the wheelchair competitors have become very competitive and go out and train 120 miles or 100 miles a week. And do it full year round, and because of that, their capabilities are now showing, you know, for everyone to see, and it's exciting to see the competitive spirit, the desire to get out there and really put forth the effort to accomplish something, and especially marathoning right now, anyway.
Now the wheelchair division comes from all over the country, just like the regular runners.
Yes. In the Boston Marathon last year, we had people from Washington State, California, Utah, you know, and then the East Coast, of course. And you know, there's been wheelchair competition since the 1940s, late 40s, I believe. But it's always been segregated, just themselves competing against themselves. And now we're still competing ourselves, but with other people. And it's more visible. And I think the United States has taken a step forward in letting this happen. There are some race directors who are against it, and that's too bad because they're the ones that are holding things back. But there are many, and St. George here, the people here are very supportive of wheelchair competition and marathoning. And that's exciting.
Now, obviously, with wheels, you actually travel much faster than with legs.
No.
Don't you?
If you think about the size of the muscle, of the arm muscles compared to the leg muscles, it's much more strenuous on the arms. Now, there might be there's advantages and disadvantages. And there's never really been enough in-depth study to determine how significant those advantages and disadvantages are. But I know that the stress is much, much more concentrated on the arms in a wheelchair. And I dare say that, you know, well, I really don't have any more years that I should be competing. I'm going to try it for another year or two. But because of the stress, it's mostly on the joints. The muscles can handle a little bit more, but the joints just can't handle because there's not the big muscles around them to give them the support. And so that's definitely a disadvantage. Of course, going down the hills is an advantage, but usually that hill, you have to go up first. Now, if things are equal, and going up the hill is the same distance and the same slope as going down the hill, the wheelchair competitor is going to lose time going up the hill and down the hill. He's going to go fast down the hill, but he'll lose more time going up than he'll gain going down. And so on a course like that, the wheelchair competitor is going to come in behind the runner. But like St. George, is the marathon they have here is a drop of a couple, 3,000 feet, I'm not really sure. And that is a definite advantage to the wheelchair competitor. And, you know, because there is one real steep hill, you know, but the rest of it is level or else downhill. And so that's, it's not a fair marathon to compare the wheelchair runner and the runner on legs.
Do you find yourself getting in an informal network with other wheelchair competitors or keeping in contact beyond the marathons?
To a degree, not as much as I'd like. You know, it's kind of interesting. There'll be a letter written here or there or a phone call. You know, I'll call a good friend of mine in Boston. I'll call Bob Hall once in a while. Well, how things are going, who's raced in what races, and how did they do, and how have you been doing, and how do you feel? And then, of course, it's not just about racing, but about other things, you know, about the personal lives and how things are going for them. And yeah, it's exciting. I've got a family life. You know, I've got my own children and my wife. And I think I've got an advantage over some of the competitors in that sense because there are some of them that are single. And it's just not, your life's just not as fulfilled unless you have a family, I don't believe. But so I'll ask him, well, how's your life coming? Are you, if you got someone on the line that you're gonna, you know, get married to? And Bob's got close a time or two, but he hasn't made it yet.
Now Hall is kind of a celebrity in the East Coast, as you have been in the Intermountain West in wheelchair competition.
Well, definitely Bob Hall was the one that did it in 1975, and so he's, in a sense, he's kind of been given the title of the father of wheelchair marathoning, you know, and he's a very avid competitor, and he's in a lot of races, and so his the awareness that people have of him is greater because he is out there a little bit more, and very well thought of, and he's a very good fellow. You know, he's usually very pleasant to be around, so people like Bob.
Do you find yourself, beyond the wheelchair competitors, the other marathon competitors, do you find yourself in contact with them quite a bit?
Not really, except for during the marathons. And I know quite a few marathoners, and it's always good to be at a race, whether it's a marathon or a smaller or a shorter race. It's always good to sit down and talk with them about their training habits or eating habits and different things like that. And I've got to know, you know, people like Bill Rogers and Frank Shorter a little bit. Bill Rogers a little bit more, and I know some runners like Randy Thomas. It's fun. You know, I enjoy associating with those fellows and enjoy comparing what I do in comparison, you know, to what they do. And they're very supportive, so that's good.
Do you get to very grim competition with them, or do you get support, hollering of supportive statements as you're running and racing with them?
It's almost always supportive, and that's exciting. Most of the runners realize that there is a difference, and they don't feel threatened. There are a few but who do feel threatening feeling there from the wheelchair competitors, but I think those that feel that threat really aren't the most competitive in the world anyway. They're probably those that are doing an 8-minute mile, you know, average, and so they really don't have any reason to be threatened. There's no competition between between the top marathoners in wheelchairs and those runners. There is between the top marathon wheelers and the top runners, because they're very close. I think in a level, on a level course, that number one guy, or the, you know, the top 20 in the United States are going to be very close to the top two or three in the United States of wheelchair competitors. But still, there's, you know, there's the different, there's enough differences that that they'll continue to support us because they're not worried about us, you know, taking away anything. Mm-hmm. Like Bill Rogers, he's extremely supportive and very excited about the things that we're doing in wheelchairs. And in fact, 2 years ago and 3 years ago, was the honorary chairman of the Boston Wheelchair, National Wheelchair Marathon. So you see that more than anything.
Is there a possibility of getting extensive international competition, maybe even to the Olympics?
Well, not in the Olympics itself. Now, wheelchair peoples who are handicapped have Olympics. I was in Holland this summer for the 1980 Olympics, and it would have been in Russia, but they, you know,
that same problems.
No, not the same problems, but problems. And that's one reason I'm very thankful that I live in the United States, because those of us who are handicapped have the opportunity to make something of our lives, whereas in Russia, they don't have that opportunity. They're kept away from society. They're kept in their little shacks. If they don't even have the opportunity to work unless it's home, you know, out of the home, maybe some sewing work out of the home. They're not allowed to get out in society.
Still a 17th century attitude.
It's sad. It's sad to see that. So I am excited to be in the United States. And, of course, there are a lot of other countries that are very supportive of their handicapped people. And as I was saying, I participated in the 1980 Olympics in Holland this summer, and it was exciting. There were 2,300 athletes there. There were 42 countries and the best, just the best competition throughout the world. It was exciting to see that.
Do you find yourself getting, well, this is probably an obvious question, you probably get letters from youngsters or from people who have lost a limb or have become handicapped some way or another. You must have been some sort of an inspiration for some people around here.
Well, I get a letter or a phone call from time to time, and that's exciting, and I hope that I can be somewhat of an inspiration for some people, not only people in wheelchairs or some other handicap, but, quote, normal people, unquote, you know. If someone isn't getting out and doing some things that maybe they ought to be, if they're feeling sorry for themselves or just aren't fulfilling their life the way they could, maybe they can pick up a little inspiration. I don't know.
It's obvious what you've done has been very much of a salve for the emotional injury that you get when you suffer a physical injury of this sort. Have you considered it a blessing, the fact that you've been able to come back from an injury like that?
Oh, I do. I don't know what it would be like to be on legs anymore. I've had some great opportunities, and I've had an excellent life. You know, it's been 10 and a half years since my accident. Got a great family, beautiful wife, and two of the best-looking kids in the whole world, you know. And no prejudice there. It's just a fact. But, you know, I've been able to travel, and I've been able to share my experiences with other people, and I've been able to share my religion with other people who don't have the same beliefs that I do, the belief that there is a life after this one, and that they'll have their full facilities again, you know. And that's exciting to be able to share that part of my life as well.
Kurt Brinkman, thank you for being with us, and good luck.
Thank you very much. I was glad to be here.
Three, two, one. We're talking with Mountain View head basketball coach Joel Gardner. Coach, you were at the other side of Orem last year.
Yes, we've split the school up there and then opened a new one down on the west side, and I elected to go down to the new school, so I was at Orem High last year.
The obvious question is, did the same thing happen with Orem that happened with Provo? The basketball players went to one school, but football to the other.
Well, I hope not, because our football team ended up the best of the two football teams, and I think we got a very even split with our basketball players. We really tried to take care of both schools, and we kept 11 juniors a year ago, and five went to one side and five went to the other, and one moved out of town. So we really tried to keep it as balanced between the two schools as we could in our cutting procedures a year ago.
You must be fascinated and be thankful to have the new facilities.
Yeah, it's been really nice. I'm going to miss kind of that old Orem gym to play our games in. It was quite a home court advantage there, but the new facility really is nice. And been a lot of new traditions to try to get set, and there's been a lot of excitement around opening a new school I haven't been involved with before.
Let's talk about your team a little bit. Not bad size.
About five juniors from the school that came up this year. They're now seniors that have played together a year. Up front, we're about 6'3", 6'2", 6'2", and fairly impressive in our first outing with Spanish Fork. Our depth with a new school and all, you have to play a lot of kids that previously probably wouldn't have played, but that's really probably what makes the split good, though, is it's an opportunity for a lot of kids to play.
Does your personnel still dictate the same sort of game you coached at Orem?
Yeah, you know, we haven't changed a lot. We're not going inside quite as much. We lost our all-stater in Chris McMullen to where we're having better balance this year in our offensive output. But hopefully we're going to get down and play good, hard defense, and we're going to pressure and try to get after people. And the teams, I think, are quite similar to what we had a year ago.
A lot of your kids that you had last year must have made coaching fairly sweet.
Yeah, big Chris McMullen did, I'll tell you, because he can shoot it in the basket. And you get a kid that can do that. Dave McGinn also came on to be a very good player, as did Scott Schlappi. And we lost most of those kids, but I think the tradition and all that's established when you have a good group go through like that kind of carries on to your kids the next year. And we're trying to live a little bit with that Orem tradition we had at the other school, although we've got to kind of make our own now as we get started with the new one.
What do you look for out of Dixie today?
I like Dixie's personnel. I remember, you know, most of them from a year ago, Graves and Gentry and Wyatt, two or three of them that were here a year ago, I think are dandy players. This early in the year, I don't have really a good scouting report on them, but, I'm just certain they're going to come to play and we're going to have our hands full here tonight.
Coach Joel Gardner, thank you for being with us and good luck tonight.
Thank you very much.
We're talking with Dixie High School head basketball coach Mark Poth. Coach, 1-0 on your career. That's a pretty good start.
Well, we got to start out to a good start, but we got two tough ones this weekend.
This is getting into the real 3A type power with Mountain View and Provo.
I think this weekend we got two of the finest coaches in the state down here and two of the most powerful clubs in the 3A ranks, I feel, this year.
Tomorrow night you get to go against your old mentor.
Well, I want it. I know most of the fans down here, Cedar City's their big game, but deep down inside, Provo's my big game.
Did you sense from the Provo side a growing rivalry with Dixie? Dixie sensed it for a while.
Yeah, I know there has been when Dixie had a fine team down here. 2 years ago, they played tough. Last year, of course, Dixie knocked them off, and I'm sure we're going to see quite a rivalry tomorrow night, and I think that's going to be one that's going to continue, especially with me coaching down here now.
Let's talk about Mountain View first. Joel Gardner, excellent coach.
Always has good talent.
Always. Good coach, fine system, tough kids. Put those three together and you got success.
Let's talk about your team going against Mountain View. What do you expect from them? What do you have to do?
Well, we're going to have to execute a lot better than we did last weekend against Hurricane. We're going to have to hit the boards and play good, solid defense.
Assessment of your team outside of the ball handling. That was obviously a little ragged last night.
Yeah, I think our guards did. We had 33 turnovers, obviously didn't execute as well as we're capable of, but I think the kids are a lot better prepared this week, and I think they're really going to have a lot better game.
Your team, once it gets out on the floor, looks a lot bigger than a lot of people expected.
Yeah, we got some pretty good size up front. If we can get them to rebound, we'll be in good shape.
Randy Wyatt, a surprise last week.
Yeah, Randy's going to start this game for us. We've always known Randy's been a good offensive player. He's starting to pick up on his defense, and really is a kid that's got to come for us for us to really be in contention this year for 3A title.
Coach Mark Poe, thank you for being with us. Good luck tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Three, two, one. We have kind of a doubleheader in our pregame interview tonight. We have the teacher and the mentor, and the student, I guess I should say. Jim Spencer, the head coach of Provo High School. Mark Poth, the head coach of Dixie High School. First of all, Coach Spencer, must be interesting to see one of your old students as an assistant coach now coaching against you.
Well, I'll tell you, it's really exciting. I'd like to see a lot more. It's when you see someone successful, whether it's a player or a coach, it's exciting and it's rewarding, and I like to see it. No matter what they go out in, I like to see people be successful that I've had something to do with.
Dixie versus Provo has been a growing rivalry. This should just about cinch it, shouldn't it?
Well, I think so. We couldn't get any more rivalry than that when we send down one of our coaches to spice it up a little bit.
Coach Poth. Going against your old teacher. I shouldn't say old teacher, your former teacher. Because Coach Spencer is still a very young coach, but it must be kind of a thrill in a way.
Oh, it is definitely a privilege. I was looking on the weekend and the opportunity I had to coach against Joel Gardner Friday night and then Jim Spencer the next night. It's definitely a highlight in my career and something I've always looked forward to.
Back to you, Coach Spencer. You've had, if not the most successful, at least one of the most successful basketball programs in the history of Utah high school basketball, and produced many good ball players to the collegiate level.
Well, I'll tell you, we've had a lot of good athletes and a lot of dedicated players. It's fortunate when you can be at a place where boys are dedicated, and I wouldn't even dare mention any of them because I would definitely miss some of them. But I have had a great opportunity to coach a lot of great players. It's been really fun.
I guess we better move off a little bit to the side here for just a moment. One of your former ball players did a lot of playing for Dixie College, Kim Garrett.
Yes, Kim is now over in Hawaii and playing for the church school in Hawaii and probably just doing a fantastic job over there for Chittister. And I'm just happy about Kim. We missed the state championship by one game with Kim Garrett against Danny Vrains. And he is a super, super player and super of a person.
Looks like we're about to have the JV game start. If you don't mind, let's move over to the end of the gym, and we'll put a break in this. After our hesitation, we're back with Coach Spencer and Coach Post. Coach Spencer, your ball club has some experience coming back this year.
Well, we do have an experience. We've got two players that started for us, and we have another player that was a part-time starter. So if you could say we have 2.5 starters back, that would be probably what we are. And so we do have some experience, and if we do have a weakness, probably on the fact that we don't have a lot of height. But we scratch a lot, and probably one of the best shooting teams I've had anything to do with as a total 5 units. So in some areas we're a little weak, but in some areas we're stronger.
Oh, Coach Poth, Dixie High off one of the best performances in a long time, especially shooting.
Well, we did. We shot 72% for the game, and it's hard to lose when you shoot that well. I thought the kids executed a lot better than we did in our opener against Hurricane. They played well. I thought they saw a little bit of their potential last night, and I hope we can continue on.
Matchup should be fairly even size-wise, maybe you with a little advantage.
Well, I think I will have the height advantage this game, but he will definitely have the speed and quickness.
From the Dixie side, the key to beating Provo.
I think we're going to have to play tough defense, and it's hard to play when you got a big, big horse in the middle who can do everything inside and four guys who can shoot anywhere outside. So we do have our job cut out for us.
Coach Spencer, the key to beating Dixie.
Well, I always say the key to beating anybody is defense. I think this is our success last night, that we forced them into two or three different offenses. And we know that Dixie has been in the gym for quite some time and doing some working. So I know that they've got their game down to a pretty fine point right now. So I think that defensively, we're going to have to really be alert and aggressive.
Coach, that got a little chuckle out of Coach Pope.
Comment? Well, we're about 2 months behind Jim on practice time, but we hope to make up with that by the time the season ends.
This is a friendly rivalry, isn't it?
Until the game starts.
Yes.
Coaches, thank you for being with us, and good luck tonight to both of you.
Thank you.
Three, two, one. We're talking with Pleasant Grove High School head basketball coach Keith Allred. Coach, sticking your mic in front of you is not that unfamiliar. I understand you've been doing some radio work up north.
Yeah, we had a little fun with the football games there up there. I don't know anything about football, but if people can't see what they're hearing, then you can say about anything you want and get away with it. So we had fun with that.
Coach, let's get back to basketball. That's your main chore right now. Pleasant Grove historically has been a most competitive ball club.
Well, we like to think that we have a good basketball program, and I think we'll be real competitive this year. It should be a good game tonight. We know that Dixie's a fine ball club, and, yeah, we come down to give them a real good test, and we hope that it turns out that way.
Experience so far in the season?
We've had three basketball games. We've won all three of them. We've been fortunate enough to do that. We defeated Judge Memorial, Payson, and Lehigh so far in our three preseason games up to this point.
Those are all three pretty good tests for you.
Well, Lehigh's a 2A school, but we feel real good about all of our games so far. We've showed good progress, and we think that we have a lot of good potential. We don't have much size, but the things that we do, I think we do quite well.
Last year, I remember you coming down to St. George, and one of the things you mentioned at that time is you felt like you were outmanned against a lot of the teams that you were going against, and you wanted to slow the ball down a little bit. What about this year?
I think it will be more of the same. When I say outmanned, I think I should maybe preface that a little bit by saying outsized instead of outmanned. We're not a big team. We have one good big player. And after that, we really fall off. And so in order to be successful, we have to play really good half-court basketball and can't get in a rebounding war or a transition type of a game. And I think that's what you're going to see tonight. If you don't see that, then we'll probably get defeated quite easily. But if you see a half-court transition or where there's no a lot of fast-breaking, a lot of helter-skelter type of basketball, then I think you'll see a pretty good game.
You're one big ball player, outstanding ball player, and outstanding young man.
It's Justin Bone. He's done a real good job for us for 2 years now. He's one of the real excellent rebounders in the state. His scoring has come along, and he's really doing a good job for us this year. He's a good leader, plays good defense, and is definitely one of the real keys for our success.
What about the rest of your starting lineup tonight?
Well, we've had some ankle problems, so I'm not really sure. Two of our kids have had sprained ankles this week. I don't think they're serious, but we'll probably start Justin Bone. We have one other starter back from last year, Kevin Allridge, who had a good game down here last year, as I remember. And we'll start him at one forward. Actually, Kevin's our leading scorer at this point, this so far in the season, averaging 17 points a game. The other four will start Craig Swap, who is a good athlete for us. He was an excellent football player, has good hands. He's 6 feet. Allridge is also 6 feet. And then at our guards, we'll start Bryce Walker and Hal Gilman. Walker's 5'11", Gilman's 5'9". Walker kind of sets things up for us. Gilman's probably the better shooter. And that'll be our starting five, probably. And then we'll see how the injuries are and go from there.
Coach Keith Allred, thank you for being with us, and good luck tonight.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We're talking with Dixie High School head basketball coach Mark Poth. Coach, great victory against Mountain View. A little bit of a disappointing loss against Provo last week.
Yeah, we came out with a split against two good teams. We feel we played well enough probably to win both games except for that second quarter to Provo. But that's just part of learning and growing.
Kids were able to make some adjustments in the second half against the Bulldogs.
Yeah, we did make some adjustments. The kids came back hard. They got a lot of fight, and I was proud of the kids in that respect.
Curious just a little bit, the reaction from your former head coach, the man you assisted last year, Jim Spencer, his reaction to your ball club, or did you get a chance to talk to him?
Well, me and Jim really didn't get a chance to talk too much after the game. He realizes I was a little disappointed, I think, but I did talk to two of his assistants, Craig Drury and Randy Cusick, and they both were very pleased with the team we had and our performance and thought we would be a contender this year.
Now, your reaction to the teams you faced so far is that they're both pretty good.
Yeah, we played three solid teams, Provo, of course, being the best by far, an exceptional team with great shooting, great rebounding, a great postman, and good aggressive defense. But we played with them, and I think even though we're 2-1 at this point, we do have confidence and feel that we are going to be a successful team this year.
Pleasant Grove, 3-0 coming into this game.
3-0, huh? I didn't know that. I thought they were 2-1. 3-0, I know they got a good unit. They beat Judge Memorial, who were the state champs last year. They beat Lehigh, and I don't recall who their other game was with, but I did get a scouting report, and the Bone kid, Justin Bone's a fine player. We have to keep him off the boards and shut down the offense if we expect to win this game.
Looking at your ball club, it has good size for a high school unit and good quickness to go with it.
Well, we do have good size, and the quickness is getting a little better each game as the kids learn what we want to do on defense and they start to execute what we've learned in practice and carry it over to the games. It'll continually get better.
With the high school kids, is defense the toughest thing to teach?
Man-to-man defense is tough to teach, but if you got the kids that are willing to work hard and put forth what they learn in practice and execute that out into the game, it does make things easier. But the kids we have are willing to work hard in practice, and I think as the year goes on, our man-to-man defense will definitely get tougher and tougher with time and practice.
Your ball club tonight, the key for a victory over Pleasant Grove.
Keep Justin Bowen off the boards.
What about a starting lineup for the Flyers?
We're going to go with Robbie Gentry at center, Wyatt and Webster on the forward line, and we'll have Mason Snow and Kelly Graves on the guard line.
There seems to be somewhat of a closeness among this ball club. From what little I've been around it, the kids seem to like one another.
Well, that's part of the key to success is you get kids on the bench that are pulling for the kids on the floor, and then vice versa when the starter comes out, they're pulling for the kid who took his spot. But that's all part of team unity and an element I feel that's important to a successful team. We try to do things as a team and try to build that team unity.
Coach Mark Poe, thank you for being with us, and good luck tonight.
Okay, thank you.